Today's episode is from my appearance on Your Superior Self with Trey Downs. And Trey and I are going to discuss the reason why you can't see your growth and what does it take to be what you must be. Tweet me at David Meltzer, your favorite takeaway. And don't forget to join me every Friday for free. Text me to join my community, 949-298-2905. And if you need anything at all, david@dmeltzer.com. You can email me anytime.
This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
Dave, thank you for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Oh my gosh, time is well worth it when spent with you, Trey. I certainly appreciate you taking the time.
So something that really caught my eye when I was doing research for you to come on the show was you wanted to inspire 100 billion, or not 100 billion. I wish you
were. I do. That sounds good to me too.
100 billion, 1 billion people to be happy. And so like, how do you do that? I mean, how do you reach that goal?
No, it's over 1 billion people. And so what I decided to do was to give free trainings every Friday to empower 1,000 people, to empower 1,000 people, to empower 1,000 people to be happy. So every Friday for the rest of my existence, I'm giving free training 11 a.m. And I am going literally looking to empower, because it's not an overnight thing to teach someone to teach 1,000 to teach 1,000. Mm-hmm. But I've decided to use this platform with my free trainings to empower 1,000 people, to empower 1,000 people, to power 1,000 to be happy. And, you know, when I first came up with this idea, I know the mind loves big ideas. That's how it reacts. And I'm like fighting the ego that I'd be made fun of. And it gets easier when you're 52 because people have been making fun of me since I've been 5 with crazy dreams that I've now, some of them have come true and some I've failed miserably at, and people laughed at me more. But when I thought of this one, I've never been so certain of the math and the methodology. I've never been so certain that I know that if people show up, you know, 2 people to get 2 people, 20 years, millions and billions of people will be empowered to be happy. And I know happiness is the greatest virus. It's spread by witnessing it. It strengthens your immune system. It'll create a collective consciousness of abundance. It will change the world. And I'm just blessed to be able to be capable to be a catalyst for that.
Yeah, I'd rather have that virus than what's going around now.
Never killed anybody. Happiness never killed anybody.
Absolutely. Was there a moment in your life where it would spark this? Like, do you remember an exact moment where you were like, this is the way I want to go?
I'm going to choke up telling you, but I do research every day, twice a day. And all of a sudden I started doing research on kids killing themselves because my girls go to college, and they kept coming with these stories of kids from their colleges and other colleges committing suicide. And I'm like, what's going on? Like, what takes, you know, an 18-year-old with, like, what could be at these good schools, like with good family, like, what, wait, something's really wrong here. And then I started doing research on this happiness, and I found out that, you know, middle-aged people are killing themselves, and that, you know, the number one cause of death, you know, became the fastest growing cause of death in America is suicide. Right? Like, these things started blowing my mind. And then the more research I did on why people kill themselves and got into happiness, and everybody has different definitions of happiness and what their happiness is. And I started realizing we don't have a why problem in the world. We have a what problem, and I'm the what guy, right? I mean, Gary Vee and those guys, the motivation guys, they're why guys. They'll get you going, but I've always been a what guy. I'll get you there. Mm-hmm. And so I created a platform to teach people what to do to be happy.
I love that. You know, and you said something earlier that caught my mind was the ego. Like, how much of the ego is out there that are just crushing people's dreams because of it continuously speaks to us and says, you're not good enough for that. You can't do that. You have no right to even try. I mean, my ego has definitely come into play sometimes in my life where I was like, you're just a small guy. You know, why even try? And I think, you know, you fighting that and realizing that and becoming aware of that. And I think practicing awareness is a huge thing to happiness as well. What are some habits that we could implement in our lives where we tap into that happiness or we can create more in our lives?
You know, I have 5 of them right now that I really stress, and they take a while. They're all practices. Like you said, you called them habits. I call them practices because some days we're going to forget, some days we're not going to do it, but that practice, the more we practice, just like a sport, the better we're going to get. So the first practice is take inventory of your values. And what does that mean? That means you have personal values like your family, your health, love, integrity. You have experiential values. Every day they're different. You know, this is what I want to do today. Experience this. You know, in fact, I think college is more experiential than academic now in practice. You're better off using the internet if you want to figure out what to do for your profession. But there's extraordinary experience involved for 4 years or less of going to college or more. And then giving and receiving values, which I put together now as I got older. I used to separate them, but giving and receiving are one because you can't give what you don't have. So until you realize to shift the paradigm of those values. But I believe every day you should make a practice of taking inventory of your values and not be, like you talked about the ego, don't be afraid to be a hypocrite. Because if you're a hypocrite, meaning your values change, that means you grew. That means you learned something. That means you're accelerating. That doesn't mean that you're a bad person because you used to think this and now you think that. That to me is a positive thing. So first practice is take inventory of your values. Second practice is ask and attract. For me, asking people how I can be of service or of value came naturally. But my biggest downfall was not asking people if they knew somebody to help me. When I ask someone, do you know someone that can help me or something that can help me? It's self-inclusive, right? It not only assumes they're a sponsor, but it also asks them if they can be a power sponsor, somebody that also can help and knows somebody that can help. The third thing is the one that's most pragmatic that changed my life. And it's the hardest one still today to really practice. I call it being a student of your calendar, right? What you pay attention to and what you give intention to create the coincidences in our lives. So I started to study twice a day, a minimum of 10 minutes a day, what I have planned. And those things are in my calendar. So I study them. I don't look at them. I don't glance at them. I don't pretend to think I know what's in my calendar. I put attention and intention into what I have planned. Then I also put attention and intention in what I don't have planned, the white space, the blank space, the empty space. And that creates a realization of what I call the Meltzer kaleidoscope. It has three lenses. The first lens is how productive am I, right? And that goes to my values. How much am I value, am I providing, giving of service, et cetera. A lens of accessibility, which is a bifocal lens, meaning it has two lenses in one. One lens is how accessible am I to others? How connected and clear is the connection between me and you and other people and everything? But also, how am I accessing what I want? How clear is the connection between me and the greatest power of source, light, love, and lessons that exist? So that's a conduit lens. And then finally, the perspective lens of gratitude. You know, one of the best practices you can have is to say thank you before you go to bed and when you wake up. I find the light, love, and lessons in everything. I realize that in what I have planned and in what I don't have planned, I naturally am going to love a certain percentage of it, but I also naturally not going to love a certain percentage of it. So I better get in the practice of using gratitude to find the love in that percentage of things that I don't love. Being a student in the calendar also includes studying sleep. I think people ignore the number one habit we all share, 8 hours a day. It's when we are most out of our own way, when we're connected consciously, subconsciously, and unconsciously to that powerful source of energy, light, and love. I don't think people utilize their sleep like they should. It's an activity. I break down my day into activity I get paid for and activity I don't get paid for. Sleep's one of the most crucial activities of my life. Fourth thing, fourth practice is do it now. Real simply, 100% of the things I do now get done. The difference between me and most people is I get shit done. I get shit done because I ask myself, can I do it now? And I do it if I can. If I can't, I put it into my calendar to be studied tomorrow and prioritized by what's most important first. I don't just rush off because something seems urgent. It needs to be important. It needs to be aligned with my values, personal, experiential, giving, and receiving values. And then finally, we started it. We're going to end it here. The fifth practice is practicing ending fear. How well can I identify when I'm an ego-based consciousness? How well can I identify the primary ego-based consciousness of fear and the secondary ego-based consciousness of the need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, guilty, resentful, all these corrosive, interfering energies that block me from what I want or block me from what I'm already connected to and what I'm going to connect to. So those are the five practices that I believe will change everyone's life. And if I can coach them on Fridays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern for free, they will be able to teach those things to empower. You will be, if you follow these five things, I guarantee happiness. How many people can guarantee you happiness? And I guarantee you happiness is so powerful, it'll strengthen your immune system and it will be spread just by other people witnessing you being happy and giving awesome. It to others.
Get shit done. Like, I love that. Like, that might be the title of the show. Get shit done.
Nice. That's a good title.
What? So my problem is sometimes like asking for help, right? Like asking people of, let's say not, I would say people that are getting shit done their networks are far more, more effective than mine. Like asking someone for a favor, asking, hey, look, I have this value that I want to bring. I don't know how to bring it forth. Like, is there anybody in your network that can help me? Like, how do you get over that fear?
Yeah. So a couple of things. Number one, disassociate yourself from it. So there's two ways to disassociate yourself. One is think about what you're going to do with what you're asking for. It takes away a lot of the guilt and the interference. So for example, if you were starving to death and your kid was starving to death, you would have no problem asking someone for some food. Mm-hmm. Because it's going to go for your kid to save his life.
Yeah.
So when you disassociate yourself with what you're doing, I disassociate myself with money because I know that the money that I have goes for everything else to help other people, literally community centers and food and relief and scholarships. And I start thinking about the things I'm going to do with the money and it gets rid of the interference that you have. Mm-hmm. The second thing is just straight alter ego effect. You know, as much as we can consciously say, hey, this isn't for me. It's also a way of disassociation by using an alter ego effect that says, hey, you know what? I'm going to be a different person. You know, I told my daughter, she's turning 16. She wants a car. And so I'm having her do research, right? And she's like, Dad, what should I say? Talk for me. I said, no. Tell them that you're interested in these three things. One, does it have Apple CarPlay? Two, is there anything wrong with the car? And three, is the price negotiable? And she had the same resistance you had, right? Fear.
Yeah.
And I said, that guy doesn't even know you. Yeah, but I said, watch what happens. Change your name to your sister's name. Watch how confident you are. Mm-hmm. So my daughter's name is Marlena. Her older sister is Mia. So she called and said, hi, this is Mia. And just bolted out with all this confidence because she had an alter ego effect. She disassociated her own ego out of it and was somebody else. Do those two disassociations, you'll be able to ask for so much help. It'd be an incredible flow, an incredible value that you can create.
That's awesome. I never even thought about that. You know, like thinking like wrestling, professional wrestling, have this alter ego and just become this totally different person and not think about the, you know, the negativity of being turned down or anything like that. Cause it, you know, you don't personally attach yourself to that.
Yeah, I put Roberto Clemente's, I represented the Clemente family. And I put Roberto Clemente's baseball card in my pocket every single day, right by my heart, because he was such a humanitarian, right? The Clemente Award is the only award in all of the sports that's only about what you give back. It has nothing to do with what you did on the field. And
yeah,
I want to remind myself of that.
So sports has been a big influence on you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So from the reason I wanted to go to college was to play football. I wanted to be a professional athlete to buy my mom a house and a car. And I ended up running the most notable sports agency in the world to use sports as a vehicle to help other people. And then starting my own sports marketing company, you know, 12 years ago or so with Warren Moon, the Hall of Fame quarterback, to make money, help people and have fun.
That's amazing. That's such a success story. But I mean, there's been times in your life where you thought this wasn't, I mean, you didn't think you could, I'm sure there are times where you thought you couldn't pull it off.
Almost my whole life. Yeah.
I mean, but how do you talk yourself up in those moments? I mean, there are definitely moments in my life where I'm like, shit, man, like I can't do this. Like, I mean, you talked about disassociation, but I mean, there's gotta be something more deep in that, right?
Yeah. So for me, once I started focusing on what gets you there, so once I started to focus in on instead of the ends, instead of I want to be a professional, I'll be happy when I'm a professional football player. When I started saying I'm going to enjoy the consistent every day, persistent without quit, pursuit of my potential as a football player or as a sports executive, then that lends me to focus in on three things. One, my skills. Right. If I'm only focusing on the pursuit of that potential in every day persistently without quitting, then I'm focused strictly on what skills do I need, have, or want right now Two, what knowledge do I have, need, or want right now? And then three, the common denominator between all fulfilled and successful people is the desire to must be what you can be, the desire to pursue your potential. And if you stay focused on those three things, you're going to get where you're supposed to get, not where you think you're supposed to get.
Oh, I love that. You're going to sit. Can you say that again?
Yeah. So you're going to get where you're supposed to be, not where you think you're supposed to be.
I love that, because you hear like The Rock say it all the time, right? Like, he wanted to be an NFL player. The best thing that never happened to him was being an NFL player, because look at him now, right?
Yeah, me too. Same thing that never happened to me was, you know, not to be successful in real estate, right? Because it saved my life and put me into sports.
Man, I don't think people, they don't think about that. They just, I want to be this. They can't take, you know, they can't get out of their way enough to realize that the universe is working for them and not against them. And everything that you put in motion for whatever your dream, how it first started out, is not going to end the same. It's like, you know, like I said, the universe is going to work for you, not against you. I mean, you know how many times I've, you know, thought myself like, shit, man, like, I'm definitely not where I started, but I didn't see this coming.
Right. And that's the whole saying, right? It's three worlds, I think, that the people live in until they get the clarity of it. One is the world of not enough. So some people that live in the world of not enough, you know, I had people when the whole COVID started, right? They live in a world of not enough. They're a victim, and they're rushing out buying toilet paper, guns, paper towels, water, going to self-defense courses. They live in a world of not enough. Right? That there's no way that you are going to be what you're supposed to be when you're only focusing on what you don't have. Mm-hmm. Then there's the world that you live in, and I used to live in, just enough, right? You live in this world where you think you got the plan, and you live, everything's for you, you're an optimist, you're doing well, but there's just enough. You know, there's so much more, right? There's the Elon Musk out there that you can't understand. And I'm going to speak for you because I know where you're at, Trey, right? You're looking at Elon Musk going, or Bezos going, how the heck? Like, who would ever think, like billions of, like, come on, like, wait a second. They live in a world of abundance, like Richard Branson. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I lived in the world of just enough, looking at Branson going, man, if I was Richard Branson, I would never do that. Why would he do, like, he already has all, but because I was living in a world of just enough. And in my mind, Richard Branson had enough.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't live in the world of more than enough, of more than enough of everything for everyone, where you will be what you're supposed to be, right? You will be, you dream big enough and then allow it to happen and allow everything to come at the right way at the perfect time. You end up so much farther than anyone else.
Yeah. I think my problem with a lot of people, and I'm just being transparent here, that's one of the things I love about the show, is just being completely honest. Is like, you know, how many times I've gotten up at 4 o'clock to go grind out, either working out or journaling or meditating, and then like having these speed bumps where it's like, geez, man, like, not another one. It's like, you know, you put in the work for 3 or 4 years and then it's like, you're not seeing the results. But you are the result, right? Like, you just, your mindset, like you said, is you just can't see past the next hill, because it's like, you're just, your mindset is not where it needs to be. And that's why I like your content so much, because it's like, it put things in perspective for myself.
We made a really good point. That's an interference to people getting what they want. And that's, you don't see the acceleration in growth. And the reason we don't, I always say, and you probably heard me, right? Your senses suck. Your eyes, your nose, your mouth, your taste, your ears, and your touch, they're not reliable. And then your memory is even less reliable. So when we're trying to distinguish growth and acceleration, improvement and progress, our minds are working in a cellular structure, a daily conscious memory of one day, and we can't remember exactly where we were in all the different millions of independent and dependent variables that we had during the day. So we go each day, and then we start, when we're pushing so hard to improve and create progress or pursue our potential, we feel stuck because we're not seeing the results, but the results are happening. Mm. That's what puts us where we're supposed to be. And if, you know, I always tell people, man, if 99% of the people quit when they're 25% of the way there because they can't see it, they feel like they're stuck. And then out of the 1%, another 99% quit when they're 50% of the way there. And that second 25% took on average half as much time as the first 25%. It's only the 1% of the 1% that are consistent and persistent in the pursuit of their potential and have faith that they're improving and growing because they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, putting the effort in, doing the five things that I teach you to do. Mm-hmm. And they end up in half as much time being 100% of the way there. Then half as much time, 200%. Half as much time, 400%. Then you understand where Branson, Musk, and Bezos get what they get. Because they have faith in the consistent, persistent pursuit of their potential. And they trust the fact and have faith in the fact that they can't perceive what they believe.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree 100%. I mean, it's like how I explain being a father to some people. It's like you live with your kids every day. So you don't see the little differences, the little growth spurts and things like that. You see them developing, you see them grow. My dad's like, he'll come over, he lives in Delaware, I live in Baltimore. He'll come over and say, man, the kids have gotten so big, but I don't notice that because they're growing, right? Like we're with them all the time. It's the same thing about your dreams or goals. Like whenever you're in the trenches and working your asses off, you don't see that growth. But then when someone you don't see for a long time or something happens where it's game time, it's like you really step up to the plate and people outside can really see the growth. It's just, you're so close to it, you can't see it.
So I always say under that respect, thank God for kids' tennis shoes, right? Thank God for kids' tennis shoes. And I'll tell you why. Because if you didn't have the tennis shoes, you wouldn't realize how fast they're growing.
Yeah.
Right? If you didn't have to go buy another pair in 4 weeks going, whoa, you're a 5.5? Right? That always to me, because my senses aren't there, right? My memory's not there. And so I equate kids' tennis shoes to what I'm doing in my office. Right, I got to find out what are the criteria that are like kids' tennis shoes that allow me to see what I can't see, right? Allow me to perceive and believe what I can't perceive and believe. And one of those things, one of the tennis shoes is faith, right? Is the aggregate of what I think, say, do, believe, and the unconscious competencies that I have. That I have faith that I'm wearing a bigger size shoe today than I wore yesterday. I have faith in that, and I'm trying to search for different criteria. It's not the bank account. And so the criteria that I use is very interesting because it goes back to why I do free training every Friday. Why? Because happiness is the thermostat. And so if I'm focusing on happiness, then I'm starting to have some KPIs that are based off of happiness. Not my bank account, not my overhead employees, not my insurance, not the number of cars I have or houses that I own, but straight out, I'm dictating every day a quantifiable tennis shoe of how I feel and what size am I wearing of happiness, right? I am Shaquille O'Neal when it comes to my tennis shoe right now and happiness. And it's going to be even bigger than that.
Oh, that's awesome. How big is that shoe? It's like 24 or something like that.
Exactly. Amazing. I put it on. I put Shaq's shoe on over my shoe in the Lakers Museum. Down here in San Clemente. They have an unbelievable museum, and he let me put his shoe over my shoe.
That's awesome.
But my happiness shoe is as big, if not bigger, than the Shaq.
That's amazing. So, like, if you're – I love that you're a dad. Like, I just love it because I can relate. What message do you want to give your daughters? Like, what is it that you want when they get older to look back and say, you know what? This is the one thing I learned from my dad, and this is something that I'm going to teach my kids. Like, what would that message be?
Four things. I learned it because I get choked up just thinking about it. I learned it because I had a conversation with my mom one day because she was making me do all these things to prove my love to her, and I wasn't communicating effectively. My relationship had interference and corrosion to it. And everyone who knows me knows how much my mom means to me. And it was bothering me, right? Because I'm moving on with my own life and my own kids. And so she gave me this advice, and it's the advice of what I want for my kids. Because I said, Mom, what do you want for from me? She said, number one, I want you to be healthy. So I want my kids to be healthy. I want them to make healthy decisions. Two, I want you to be happy. I want my kids to come to my Friday trainings at 11 a.m. and learn how to be happy. The five things, the basis of what I teach. I want them to be happy. Three, I want them to appreciate not only me, but everything. Meaning appreciate means to be grateful for it, but also means to add value. Mm-hmm. When your house appreciates, an investment appreciates, it adds value. So I want them to be grateful and add value to everything and everyone around them. And then finally, I want them to love everything and everyone the same as me. So if they can learn to be healthy, happy, appreciate, and love. I've done both all three daughters and my son, who's 10, all of them. I've passed the legacy, and those are the four legacies that I would love to teach, you know, on my free trainings to everyone, the 1,000 to teach 1,000. And so you take those four things, you add in the five things after that, and then I got another 10 little steps to get to those five things. I'm a think and grow rich pragmatist when it comes to the most, you know, theoretical and faith-driven life. I'm like a mathematician of technology of how to live a faithful life.
That's awesome, man. Just don't make a Common Core. I've been doing that all like for the last past 8 weeks. I can't do it. Just don't make a Common Core, man.
Nice. This is the stuff that I'm making. I don't know if you can see it. Rain Man charts, so I can get clarity to teach people stuff.
I love it. Do your daughters have they participated in your Friday coaching?
So they have. So, and they've come in person. So I've been doing this over 20 years. So when my girls have spring breaks, or they like to come in. Originally they came in because they got so much attention from everyone that worked for me, and they got free food, and I let them choose where we'd order the food from. But one of my daughters is going to be working for me this summer. She's done some really cool videos called The Closet, you know, because I've been working in the closet, and it's really much like The Office.
Sure.
And it's been one of the greatest joys to have them participate in my work. And so two are in college, but they've been home because of COVID. One's a sophomore in high school, just going to be a junior. And then my 10-year-old son, and all of them, the 10-year-old knows the most, and because he sucks in everything, right? And he doesn't attend, but he listens, right? Mm. And he'll say cancel, you know, like he'll say things, you know, and I'm like, what? He's like, you know, show me your friends and I'll show you your future, Dad. And I'm like, okay.
But like to be a father and see that, like see where you started out, right? Like and seeing all that effort that you built into this, in this empire that you built, and then seeing your kids be a part of that, right? Doesn't that, like, what do you feel when you see that?
I feel health, happiness, appreciation, and love. That's it, man. I am so blessed. I see everything for the light, the love, and the lessons. You know, look, my kids aren't perfect. I got three teenage daughters, right? And if your daughters start talking about dating and they drive cars, and we talked about that earlier, right? Put it this way. Out of all the saints that you've ever heard of in history, mm-hmm. none of them had four kids, let alone three daughters. And I promise you, if they had to travel across country with four kids, by the time they made it to Maine from San Diego, they wouldn't be saints anymore.
That's so funny.
You want to polish your soul? Have four kids.
Damn right.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of The Playbook. But more importantly, I want you to join my text community. I'm doing a lot of fun things there. One-on-one conversations, trainings, giveaways. And it's the first place I release all of the information that I'm giving. So join me at my text platform, 949-298-2905. That's 949-298-2905. Join my exclusive community.